This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cunnan in Washington. Harman takes a hike. Webb won't run. Tea partiers embarrass the House leadership. And the presidential welcome wagon finally reaches the neighbors at the Chamber of Commerce. It's Wednesday and time for a
fruitcake
edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to discuss the week in politics and a tough week for moderate Democrats as the DLC announces plans to shut her up, Jim Webb decides not to try for a sophomore term in the Senate, and California Congresswoman James Harman resigns from the House. Speaker Boehner can't wrangle his own right in a vote on the Patriot Act. Sarah Palin fails to trademark her name and won't speak at the CPAC later this week. In a bit, we'll speak with former DNC chair and Vermont Governor Howard Dean. Later in the program, new doubts about what used to be ironclad evidence in shaken baby cases. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. As usual, we begin with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hello, Neil. Okay, well, lots of talk about Republican women possibly running for president. Sarah Palin gave this big address, big speech at the Reagan Center last week, commemorating the Gipper's centennial. Michelle Bachmann is going to Iowa. There's some mention of Sharon Angle going to perhaps South Carolina for something. So here's the question. Which Republican woman received the most votes in the primaries in history?
If you think you know which woman received the most votes in Republican presidential primaries in history, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Of course, the winner gets a fabulous no-prize T-shirt. But, Ken, let's see if we can get right to the news. And today's blockbuster, freshman senator from Virginia Jim Webb will not be running again.
He announces this on his 65th birthday. Jim Webb is 65 years old today. Now, it's not a surprise. We've talked in the past that Jim Webb never really was very comfortable being a senator. He was never seemed happy being a senator. He's a very serious, earnest guy, and you don't have serious, earnest guys in the Senate anymore. But he was not raising money, too. And a few weeks ago on the show when we talked about George Allen, the guy he unseated 6 years ago, or a night in 2006, there was questions about whether Jim Webb would run again, and today he says he's not going to do it.
And there's a couple of other interesting notes about Virginia, one of which you mentioned George Allen. He's so far not been endorsed by the Republican Party hierarchy in the state of Virginia. One of the reasons you try to come out early is to, well, grab all the endorsements, grab all the money, and crowd out the field.
Well, two things. First of all, there is, Bob McDonnell, the governor, said, I have to worry about the 2011 budget first. I worry about 2012 later. And two, there is a challenge to George Allen's nomination in the primary. Jamie Ratke, a Tea Party candidate, is getting some conservative support. But also, endorsements we learned in 2010 did not make a big difference. John Cornyn, the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, remember, he had initially endorsed Arlen Specter and Charlie Crist. So, you know, you don't want to make those mistakes early with early endorsements.
Were they Republicans?
They were at one point, I think.
Okay. There's the other side, and that's the Democrats who now have to scramble for a candidate. Interestingly, you might think former Governor Tim Kaine, the chair of the Democratic National Committee, might be interested. But as he told MSNBC, well, just a couple of weeks ago,
I fully expect that he's going to run again, and I'm going to work every bit as hard for him in 2012 as I did in 2006.
And if Jim Webb does not run, would you consider that Senate race?
No, I've got a job I really like right now, tough though it may be, and I'm doing what the president wants me to do.
That's Andrea Mitchell there asking the question about, he's apparently not going to run. He might change his mind.
Well, of course, he can change his mind. And some other names have been thrown out there. Tom Perriello, who's defeated for re-election, congressman from Virginia, a possible candidate. But, you know, for all the talk about how Michael Steele was such a disaster as Republican national chairman, we should point out, or somebody should point out, that Tim Kaine, as Democratic national chairman, the Democrats lost in like 6 Senate seats, 63 House seats, which is unbelievable a number. Tons of state legislative seats. So if we're talking about the role that that Tim Kaine played as the DNC chair, I'm not sure that 2010 was something you want on his resume.
That's the DNC. What about the DLC? This was the power structure that, helped propel Bill Clinton.
Exactly. The Democratic Leadership Council, which was formed in the mid-1980s after the very impressive performance of Walter Mondale, because remember, he did carry Minnesota. Walter Mondale, George McGovern, this was a group of moderate centrist Democrats who didn't like the so-called left-wing leaning of the Democratic Party, so they wanted to move this party more to the center. So you had the Chuck Robbs of the world and the Sam Nunns, but of course you had Bill Clinton, a former chair of the DLC. You had Joe Lieberman, a former big guy in the DLC. When Bill Clinton was president, it was a DLC kind of Democratic Party. A lot of the progressives were not happy with it, the way that Bill Clinton focused on balanced budgets and welfare reforms and things like that. But now the DLC seems to be disappearing completely.
And there is another moderate Democrat, Jane Harman, the Congresswoman of California, who says, she'd rather run the Woodrow Wilson Center.
Well, she's resigning from Congress at the end of the month. She'll succeed Lee Hamilton, also another former Democratic member of the House. Jane Harman, very centrist in intelligence matters and foreign policy matters.
And defense.
And defense matters. Of course, the left never liked her. Of course, she was a big booster in the beginning of invading Iraq. She supported Bush on many intelligence decisions. Nancy Pelosi was never a fan when Jane Harman tried to take over the Intelligence Committee when the Democrats took over Congress after 2006. Nancy Pelosi blocked her, and they said there was a lot of personal rivalry there. And Jane Harman may just say, look, it's just time to go.
We have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. The woman to get the most primary votes in Republican presidential primaries, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. We'll start with Jerry. Jerry with us from Cleveland.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I believe it was Liddy Dole.
Elizabeth Dole, the former senator from the state of North Carolina.
She was. Before she was a senator, she ran for president in 2000, or should I say she ran for president in 1999, but she dropped out of the race well before the primaries and caucuses, never got a primary vote.
Jerry, thanks very much. Let's see if we go next. This is Bob. Bob with us from Rochester, Minnesota.
Hi, this is Bob Sixta from Rochester, and I believe it is Pat Schrader. Or Schroeder from Colorado?
That would have been good, except she's a Democrat.
She is a stop at that. Well, she's a Democrat, right? But also dropped out of the race.
I thought it was just the female president.
No, Republican.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Thank Bob. You. Let's see if we go next to, this is Reese, and Reese with us from Laramie, Wyoming.
I know, I love this show, long time listener.
Thank you.
Are you a first time caller?
First time. is it Susan Gail Ducey?
Susan Gail Ducey.
I would say no.
But, if it were be a Susan Gail Ducey coupe.
But wow, that's bad for my standards. Yeah. I don't even know who Susan.
She's 1996, I know that.
No, well, that's not the correct answer, but that's an interesting name.
Reese, thanks very much. We'll look that one up. And let's go next to Paul. Paul with us from Rochester, New York.
Yes, hi. It's Margaret Chase Smith of Maine.
And that is correct. I remember.
Ding, 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 ding.
I remember the Maine. Margaret Chase Smith, the senator from Maine, ran in 1964 primaries. 224,000 votes that year. And you think of what Hillary Clinton and other women got on the Democratic side, but that still remains the record on the Republican side.
Thanks very much, Paul. We're going to put you on hold to collect your particulars, and we will send you out a Political Junkie No Prize T-shirt in return for your promise of a digital picture that we can post on our wall of shame.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see if I find the hold button. There
we go. Neil, we've been getting a lot of promises, but I don't know if we're getting that many pictures. To be
really?
Honest.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have to go out and get the get some people to take those shirts back.
That's right.
All right. In the meantime, we've had, there's interesting, President Obama spoke to the Chamber of Commerce. That was the fruitcake joke we made earlier in the program, carried it across the street, or at least carried the joke across the street. But meeting today with John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and the Majority Leader, Eric Cantor, at the White House at lunch.
And Kevin McCarthy, right,
to discuss budget cuts and free trade deals.
Well, they're obviously, somehow the president seemed to have gotten a message. One, he spoke to the Chamber of Commerce, as you said, on Monday, talked about what we have in common rather than what we don't have in common. And we know a lot of things that are not in common. The Chamber of Commerce spent millions of dollars to defeat pro-Obama legislators in the November elections, but he's also meeting with Republicans. He says he wants to reach across party lines. He wants to be less partisan and more accommodating, and we haven't seen a return a gesture by the Republicans, but whatever Obama is saying, you wonder if the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is very happy about this.
In the meantime, the Republican right is, well, we mentioned at the billboard of the program at the top of the hour that they managed to defeat requiring a supermajority extensions on the Patriot Act provisions. They're going to bring that up later in the month on a regular motion that will require just a simple majority, and you can expect that it's going to pass. But Speaker Boehner clearly embarrassed.
You wonder why they pushed the bill, because obviously the idea is they can count votes, and if they needed a two-thirds majority, two-thirds or three-fourths, a two-thirds majority to come through. There's something coming in the thing right here. Okay, something was just coming in the middle of something.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, I apologize for that. But you think that the Republicans would have been better at counting votes, and they didn't have the votes, clearly.
In the meantime, the Speaker of the House was on a talk show in Cincinnati where he was asked, if he considered himself a member of that rebellious group.
Is John Boehner a member of the Tea Party?
I should be.
Are you?
I don't know if I actually pay dues, but I'm a big believer in the Tea Party. I talk to Tea Party activists all over my district and all over the country every day.
John Boehner channeling Ralph Cramden there.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, we keep talking about how the Tea Party has helped elect Democrat Republicans in 2010, but the Tea Party seems to be saving most of its ire for fellow Republicans. There was an email that went out yesterday attacking Dick Lugar, Orrin Hatch, for example.
And Orrin Hatch, here's another piece of tape. Orrin Hatch, a famous lion of the Senate who's worked across party lines at various times but considered very conservative. Now he's asked if he's a member of the Tea Party.
In Utah, we have a lot of terrific Tea Party members. I've been trying to meet with them. They suggest that I hold town hall meetings. I've had seven of them since last April. It used to be if you get 50 people out to a town hall meeting, it was a good town hall meeting. Mine have averaged 500 to 700 absolutely angry people.
And, maybe he's taken a lesson from Bob Bennett.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, he knows that even Bob Bennett, the Republican senator from Utah, very, very conservative, but not conservative enough for some Tea Party folks, was defeated last year at the state convention. Or immediately after that, Tea Party folks said, we're going to go after Orrin Hatch next. Jason Chaffetz, a member of Congress, is rumored to be challenging Hatch in next year's primary. And Hatch obviously wants to put that off, you know, make sure that doesn't happen.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. Up next, where do moderates fit in today's Democratic Party? We'll talk with former DNC chair Howard Dean. Democrats, what is the future of moderates in your party? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And take over this beautiful land. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is here, as always, without a fruitcake, sadly. But you can get the same feeling, lightheaded and a little bit guilty, by reading his latest column, downloading the podcast, and trying to solve his scuttle button puzzle. You can find all that at npr.org/junkie.
Neil, just remember, there was a little distraction before, and the distraction was, I now know who Susan Ducey was. She ran for president in 1996. In the New Hampshire primary, she got 152 votes, not as much as Margaret Chase Smith got, 224,000. But
well, in any case, it's been a tough week for moderate Democrats. Jim Webb announced today he will not run for a second term in the U.S. Senate from Virginia. Jane Harman's decision to retire from Congress in California and the demise of the Democratic Leadership Council. Howard Dean, the former head of the Democratic National Committee, joins us in just a moment. Today, we want to hear from Democrats. What's the future of moderates in the party? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from the studios of Connecticut Public Radio in New Haven, former governor of Vermont and former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, is Howard Dean. He ran for president back in 2004. Governor Dean, nice of you to be with us today.
Thanks for having me on. If I could just take a moment to defend Tim Kaine. You all savaged him and his performance. The truth is, the DNC chair doesn't run the DNC during a time when we have a Democratic president. So I don't think you can blame Tim Kaine for the problems that we had in this past election.
Blame the White House, then.
Yeah. You can't, because the White House runs the DNC. So, you know, I think it's unfair to blame Tim Kaine. I think he and Perriello are probably the two leading candidates for the Senate nomination. Maybe I don't even know if either one of them wants it, but I think they can run, and if they do run, I think one of them is going to win.
Well, what do you make of Jim Webb's decision not to run again? Is this?
I was surprised, I must say, but I think your analysis was right. He's not a comfortable fit for the Senate, and he's a guy who's going to do what he thinks he wants to do in life, and that's the way he's always been. I think he's a pretty admirable person, and I think he's contributed a lot to the Senate and to the dialogue.
And we've also had Jane Harman decide to step down in California. As we look at that race, it's likely to be a Democratic hold in a special election.
I think that's probably true. I always got along very well with Jane Harman and liked her a lot, but it is true that progressives didn't like her very much. But she always managed to win that seat, and again, I think that will continue to be a Democratic seat.
But with all of these departures, what do you make of the future of moderate Democrats? The Blue Dog Coalition, once burgeoning, is dwindling.
Well, I don't think it really has anything to do with where they sit in the party. I also think the terms moderate, conservative, and liberal have been thrown around injudiciously. I was always a moderate, but now I'm supposedly the left spokesman for the left inside Washington. The problem is the axis of the country has slid right. So there aren't many Democrats that are, aren't what we would call in the old days moderate.
Ken?
Governor Dean, you make an interesting point, and it's true. You were seen by many as the spokesman of the left, and yet you were derided by some on the left when you were DNC chair by talking about the 50-state strategy, by building up parties in Mississippi and Louisiana and states like that, and yet you won a whole bunch of special elections because of that that 50-state strategy. But I have a question. Speaking of progressives and the unhappiness about progressives, here you have President Obama meeting with the Chamber of Commerce on Monday, and of course, he said he would reach out to the people who opposed him, but here he is talking about that we can get together and maybe we have more in common than you'd think. What's the reaction among progressives when you hear something like that?
I actually think that it's a good thing that he's doing that. I certainly have no use for the Chamber of Commerce. I think they've become sort of the new the finance committee for the Republican Party, and I don't appreciate their tactics or their ads. In fact, as you probably know, a lot of local chambers now have stopped paying dues to the American Chamber of Commerce, and they've lost a lot of big corporate members because of that. But I always believed when I was governor, you ought to reach out to everybody. The president is the president of all of America, not just the Democratic half of it. So I think he did the right thing. I was very pleased when the president, at the State of the Union address, when he made a point of saying, we're not going to maintain tax cuts for people who make $1 million a year while we're cutting the budget for everybody else. So I think he's laid down the gauntlet about who he is. I don't think he's changed. He's doing his job. When you're the president, you're supposed to reach out to everybody, not just the people you agree with.
Some people have pointed out he did not make any remarks about the poor in that speech.
Yeah, and would I have written the speech differently? Yeah, I think businesses, particularly Wall Street, I wouldn't say business in general, but Wall Street has sort of abandoned its social conscience over the last 15 or 20 years. And I might have said something about that, because the business community has been very progressive in the past. There's always this tension between the more liberal group and the business people. But the fact is, business did a lot in the civil rights era. Business has actually advanced gay rights enormously, much more so than the government has. So business can, when the country, if for the in order for the country to be strong, business has to advance a social agenda, not just about making money. And I think right now we're at a down cycle on that, but I think we'll get back into an up cycle again.
Our guest is a former governor, former DNC chair, former presidential candidate Howard Dean. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. What's the future for moderates in the Democratic Party? Rob's on the line from Hamilton in New Jersey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think that the role of moderates today in the Democratic Party is similar to what liberal Republicans played in the Republican Party before they were all driven out. I think we have to promote a moral as well as practical model of ethical capitalism that recognizes the social responsibility of business, but also the limitations of government in meeting the needs of society. And we have to juxtapose that against the twin poles of corporate libertarianism, which the Republicans uphold, and state capitalism, which the Chinese uphold.
Well, Rob, I think a lot of people would be skittish about saying we should emulate liberal Republicans, as you suggest. There are not many of those left, at least not in
elective office. I think that was incredibly well said. I totally agree with that. I think we want to make capitalism work, but in order for capitalism work, there have to be some ethics associated with it. And by the way, I shouldn't have whacked Wall Street too hard. There are a few people on Wall Street. I mean, I immediately thought of Stan Druckenmiller, who's put about $50 million a year into Jeff Canada's Harlem Children's Zone. There are people on Wall Street who do very, very good things. So I shouldn't, you know, it's always risky to generalize about that, and I want to take that back publicly before I'm forced to do it 3 days later.
Rob, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I think that's a very good statement. That's exactly what I think a moderate Democrat is somebody who understands that capitalism, in order for capitalism works, there has to be regulation. Capitalism, we save capitalism from itself by having reasonable regulations. But it's definitely true. If you go too far with the regulations, then the whole system grinds to a halt because, in fact, it's people in private enterprise that create jobs. That's true. And if that's what a moderate Democrat is, I don't think we have any interest in driving them out. I think what you all in the media talk about, people like Ben Nelson, as moderate Democrats. If you vote with a Republican 65% of the time, I don't think that qualifies you as a moderate Democrat.
Ken?
Governor Dean, some progressives said after the results of the 2010 elections, which saw more blue dog Democrats lose than liberal Democrats, they said the Democratic Party is better off with the conservative slash blue dog influence of the Democratic Party. Do you agree with that?
Without it, you mean?
Mm-hmm. With
it,
yeah.
Diminished.
Yeah. Diminished.
Well, look, I'm not interested in getting people. We clearly had a huge win in 2006 and 2008, and it was because of the 50 state strategy and reaching out to all kinds of people. And it was also because George W. Bush was hitting the skids in terms of his popularity. That certainly had a lot to do with it. I don't think we're better off with fewer members. I mean, I personally believe Nancy Pelosi is a great speaker, and she'd still be speaker if we hadn't lost 60 seats. So, but I also don't have a lot of use for people who take pages out of the Republican hate platform, the anti-immigrant, anti-gay stuff. I don't go for that. I don't think the younger generation goes for that are elected Barack Obama either. So I have no problem with conservative Democrats in terms of economics and regulation and things like that. I do have a problem with the hate stuff that the Republicans have been peddling for 25 years. That I don't welcome that into the party.
Here's an email we have from Susan in Edgewater, Florida. Comment, what is a moderate? A moderate in today's Democratic Party is to the right of what we used to call a Rockefeller Republican. The far right has shouted and browbeaten our politicians into silence on traditional Democratic issues and values. On top of that, they are sellouts to Wall Street and other huge corporate interests.
I think that is also, I also agree with that very strongly. Somehow a moderate in Washingtonese has become somebody who's willing to give in to the Republicans. I don't think you can do that. I think a real moderate, or the liberal, and the liberal Republicans, with the exception of their attitudes towards unions, liberal Republicans, really liberal Republicans, were terrific. They were pro-environment, pro-civil rights. We would never have passed the Civil Rights Bill in 1964 without liberal Republicans.
Another email, this from Samuel in Keyseltown, Virginia. He says, what about moderates in the Democratic Party, you ask? I say, what about or where are the moderates in either major party?
Well, I think most of the Democratic Party are moderates by Susan in Florida's definition of it by now, because the whole axis of the country's politics has moved to the right, which is, for me, a very unwelcome development. And again, I don't mind I think we ought to have a debate about economics. I have no problem with people thinking that we should give corporations tax breaks or we shouldn't give corporations tax breaks. Let's have a debate on that. But I don't have any patience with the intolerance and bigotry of the right that you know, victimizes minorities, Muslims, gays, immigrants. This kind of stuff is, you know, America has always been at its worst when that kind of stuff is in its ascendancy. And I think we ought to push that one back and keep it pushed back.
Let's go next to Jerry. Jerry with us from Buffalo.
Hi. First of all, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate everything Ken brings to the show on a daily basis.
Well, thanks very much
thanks,
for
Dad.
That as the host.
Thanks, Dad.
I appreciate that.
As a Democrat, I got to say that one of the things that we need to do is to have a more pragmatic look towards actually achieving a smaller government, and I think you can't do that without a serious conversation with the teacher unions, state and federal employee unions. I thank them for all they've done for workers' rights, but realistically, it's not sustainable long term.
And so you would think there would have to be things like rollbacks on pensions, Jerry?
Yeah, and actually with the pension question, I wonder how much of the problem with a faltering Social Security system could be resolved with a lot of these unions that have been carved out being brought back into the fold.
Well, Howard Dean, let's put on your former governor hat for just a moment. This is being faced all around the country.
It is. You know, Vermont, both Republican and Democratic, under governors of both parties, have been run really well. We don't have the kinds of problems that other places have. But we know we have our problems. As far as the unions go, the unions are going to have to change and adapt. Once the problem is that these are big institutions, but there are lots of other big institutions, and institutions have a real problem with changing and adapting, and they need to do that. For example, I do some part-time work with the American Federation of Teachers working in a charter school that they run. Well, you know, most unions hate charter schools, not anymore. So the AFT, there's an example of a union that's adapting quickly. The SEIU is another one that adapts quickly. The former leader, Andy Stern, played a big role in turning Walmart into a much more socially responsible corporation than it had been in the past. So when these big institutions, whether on the left or the right or the center, the Catholic Church is another big institution that's having really problems adapting. When times change, the institutions have to adapt, and that's what you're seeing in the union movement. And I think they will adapt, and I agree that that things that have been off the table before, defined contributions instead of defined benefits, we have to start looking at those now. But the union movement has been so important in making America a strong and prosperous country that I don't think we should undergo a wholesale attack on the union movement. That's why teachers get paid decently, and if you want good schools, you're going to have to pay teachers decently. That's as plain as that.
Wednesday, Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us. Our guest is Howard Dean, former chairman of the DNC, former governor of Virginia, former presidential candidate. Vermont, yeah, one of those V states. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
I couldn't read this. Sorry. Governor Dean, you're talking about economic questions. You know, Washington, as you know, is obsessed with declaring winners and losers, and that's probably more our fault than anybody else's fault. But there was a lot of talk when President Obama agreed to the extension of the Bush-era tax cuts. In exchange, he got an extension of for the unemployment benefits. In your view, if you had to go winners and losers there, who won that battle?
Obama won, even though I was on the other side of that. I strongly disagreed with him about extending the tax cuts for the people who make $1 million a year. But he was a huge winner. He's had a terrific run since Election Day. It was pretty awful before Election Day. But he really, that political compromise, I have to say, even though I didn't support it, was a big milestone for the president, because he was seen as a president who could get things done and bring people together, which is, after all, what the American people really, really want. So I would say that was a big win for him. I thought the State of the Union was a big win. It was panned in Washington. God, everything goes on in Washington is completely out of touch. It's just astonishing. The American people loved it. They loved the Democrats and the Republicans sitting together and not having it being a partisan series of alternating partisan rallies. They thought the president's speech had substance and focused on jobs. I think the president's looked mighty good since November 2nd.
And it's interesting. We just got a comment on our blog from Matt Harris, who suggests that maybe if Senator Webb is looking for another job, maybe in the next Secretary of Defense.
He'd certainly be very well qualified, although I'm in no hurry to get rid of Robert Gates. I think he's been terrific. But I think Jim Webb would be great. He doesn't put up with any nonsense. He obviously knows the service inside out, and he is, I think, conservative enough about money so that he could make the cuts that are going to be necessary in the Defense Department stick.
We have to ask what you're doing, Governor Dean. We know you're out making speeches and, as you say, working on some coalitions. But what are your plans for the future?
Well, I don't have any fixed plans. I love what I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of work with the National Democratic Institute, so-called NDI. And I do a lot of work abroad in elections without being paid for it, because I don't think American consultants add much to the mix. But we've really done some interesting things. I'm also working for Democracy for America, which was my old campaign, which is still a training organization now run by my brother. So I do some consulting for them. So I'm keeping myself very, very busy.
Ken?
As Democratic National Chairman, you were instrumental in getting the Democrats in the majority in the Congress after 2006, getting Obama elected 2008, and yet reports say that your relationship with the Obama administration has been, if nothing else, strained. Is that true, and how do you account for that?
Oh, I don't know that it's strained, but I certainly have not hesitated to say when I support the president, when I oppose the president. But I don't feel any particular animus to the administration, so you'll have to ask them that question.
Governor Dean, we hope you'll come back with us on Political Junkie.
Thanks very much for having me on. It's extremely entertaining and fast-paced.
Governor
Howard. Now I know who Susan Ducey is.
Well, and see, it's educational, too. Howard Dean,
exactly.
The former governor of Vermont, with us from the studios at Connecticut Public Radio in New Haven. And he's, of course, also the former chair of the DNC and a former presidential candidate. Political junkie Ken Rudin is going to stay with us for a few minutes. We've got a few things we didn't manage to catch up on in our potpourri segment. So we're also going to be talking about the new guidelines, not new guidelines, but new doubts about some shaken baby verdicts. Interesting article in the New York Times by Emily Bazelon. So stay with us for that. I'm Yul Cohen. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Minutes. We're going to be talking about new doubts on some shaken baby verdicts, but political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. And we have to mention that later this week, indeed tomorrow here in Washington, D.C., the CPAC conference, that's the big conservative beano that happens every year.
Right. The Conservative Political Action Conference, they've been doing this for at least 30 years. Ronald Reagan used to attend, but there's a big controversy this year because a group called Go Proud, G-O-P-R-O-U-D, Go Proud, a bunch of gay conservatives are playing a role at CPAC, and there are a lot of groups, the Family Research Council, the Defense of Marriage folks, the Heritage Foundation, are all, Jim DeMint, Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, all boycotting the conference because they say that this violates a tenet of a conservative thought.
Mike Huckabee and Sarah Palin aren't going to be speaking. They say they have schedule conflicts.
Well, that's true. And, of course, a lot of the other Republican would be. I mean, again, the 2012 Republican battle for the nomination really hasn't officially started yet. Nobody except Herman Cain of the Godfather Pizza fame is an announced candidate. But Haley Barbour, Mitch Daniels, Newt Gingrich, Tim Pawlenty, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, John Thune, they'll all be at CPAC, but not Sarah Palin. She hasn't been there for the last 4 years, and yet everybody still wants to talk about Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin.
Well, she's busy trying to trademark her name.
She tried to do that. She Bristol Palin, and apparently that failed.
Neglected to sign the form.
Well, it's called paleontology, I think, is the official term for that.
But one conservative we're not mentioning who's going to not be there, or at least not speaking, and that's the person on the cover of this week's National Review, and that's Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida.
Well, Jeb Bush, there are a lot of, you know, I remember walking out of the 2004 Republican convention in New York City, Madison Square Garden, and right in front of me there was a bunch of people saying Jeb in 2008, like they didn't have enough Bush after 2000 and 2004. But the fact is, one, Jeb Bush is still he's always thought of as the smart Bush brother. He was always thought
the smarter older brother. Yes.
Yeah, nobody's also, you know, he had good ratings in good reviews in Florida, left very popular. He's beloved by conservatives. He doesn't have the stigma that George W. does with the ballooning deficits and the compromises and so many things. But, and so National Review says this is the guy we need in 2012. I kind of think it's because there are so few real candidates for the conservatives running in 2012. But Jeb Bush is very unlikely to run, most likely, if he is going to run at all. It's 2016. My guess is that the real conservative is going to be Susan Ducey. Watch that name.
Watch the name of Susan Ducey. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, our political junkie, every Wednesday. You can read his column, download his podcast, and try your hand at his scuttle button, all at npr.org/junkie. Ken, as always, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.